Welcome to Buzzardry. It is April 22nd, right before 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm Patrick McGee. I'm here with Jonathan Brennan, Jacob Fitzgerald. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, other than a little stomach bug. How about y'all?
Ooh. Thankfully not dealing with that, knock on wood.
I got back a little late last night from that Heisman-Dallas trek, too, but happy to be here.
Yeah, so Golden Eagles go 3-1 over the week, beating Nichols 9-6 in a midweek Matthew Russo walk-off, and then taking 2 out of 3 against ULM, a couple of run roll wins on Friday and Saturday before losing 5-1 on Sunday. But yeah, I guess what was y'all's Golden Eagles now 25 and 15, I believe. 11-7 in the league. So I guess what were y'all guys' thoughts on the week that was in USM baseball?
Go ahead, Fitz.
Yeah, you know, looking at it from a high level view, it looks like a really good week. But as much as I hate to say it, that loss on Sunday kind of took all of the wind out of the sails for me. You know, considering the RPI implications and how I guess important and how likely I thought that we were to sweep the weekend.
Yeah, I think I agree. It feels like one of the more empty 3-1 weeks in our program's history. Big win on Tuesday. You had to play near perfect baseball for the last 7 innings of that game to win, and that's exactly what happened, both on the mound and at the plate. And then so that you build off the Sunday win at Georgia State, and then you kind of do what you're expected to do. You put a couple games on ice, which we hadn't seen in a while, on Friday and Saturday. And I think that that on top of the parallels of the going on the run after the blowouts last year against Coastal, and okay, you got 4 in a row here and a winnable game on Sunday, and you just sleepwalk for 9 innings. And yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I think the big turning point, I guess, would have been the Civilly flip over the first baseman's head, and they score a run. And I felt like that just kind of demoralized the team a little bit and really just kind of took the wind out of everybody's sails and, you know, kind of flattened everybody. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the kind of the issues that we go back to with this team is the inability to sweep a series. I mean, you've only done that now one time this year. It was over against
you. Out of 6 opportunities.
Right, yeah. I mean, now, you know, overall, I guess that was series number 10 on the year. But, yeah, the Sunday struggles, and, yeah, again, only one sweep against, you know, a Marshall team that's going to finish toward the bottom of the standings. And, you know, you need a kind of a favorable call in that one on Saturday to get that one. And then, you know, just continued inconsistencies on offense. I mean, if you look at the offensive numbers overall, I mean, they're not terrible. They're probably a little bit above average, 836 OPS. Then you look within the league, 854 OPS. So those are, you know, okay, you know, decently mediocre numbers. I think, you know, that last I checked, the Division I OPS average was 822. But again, it's just inconsistent where you'll put together, you know, 2 good hitting or good offensive performances on Friday and Saturday, and then you come back on Sunday and you can only scratch across 1 run. It hits the balls hard, but again, just couldn't get the big hit. And yeah, that's just kind of been the story is, you know, can't string together more than really 2 games, quality games offensively. I guess maybe, you know, the Louisiana Tech game, I think you hit it well all 3 games there maybe. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've kind of talked about the need to sweep series, and this was certainly one of the 2 we kind of looked at heading down the stretch, ULM at Arkansas State, and, you know, you weren't able to do that. And, you know, there's really 3 series now or 3 games you've lost now against sub-100 teams at home, which are just RPI killers, between Missouri State, which, you know, we thought was maybe a decent series earlier in the year. They're, you know, several games below 500 in the 100s of RPI. And then, of course, Marist, which is, you know, one of the worst losses we've talked about in recent memory. Then, you know, ULM, who is better. But again, that's a team that if you want to be an at-large, safe at-large team, you got to sweep. So, just kind of inconsistency on offense and just inability to close out these series on Sunday.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I saw a stat. I'm going to see if I can pull it up as I'm talking, so that I'm sure that'll go very smoothly and error-free. But, I mean, you look at a bunch of different stats, hitting, pitching, ERA, they all look very similar with 15 games left in the season that I saw today. Okay, at this point in the season last year, our batting average is 14 points higher, our slugging percentage is 19 points higher, our on-base percentage is 5 points higher. We're averaging 0.3 runs per game more, and we have a 0.01 ERA better. So every single stat that I just listed off is better at this point in the season than it was last year. Yet our RPI is 31 points lower, our strength of schedule is 50 points lower, and our strength of schedule is 50 points lower. The difference between last year and this year is those bad losses. That's it. Can't sweep. Can't show up consistently for all three games in a series. We've only done it once this year, I guess. And it's amazing with those three or four bad losses, if you can kind of cherry pick and switch those for some more respectable losses, you're not only in, you're probably in the hosting picture with a really good chance to insert yourself in that conversation these next 2 weekends. When we say that, you won the series, 2 out of 3 in teams to death has got you firmly on the bubble right now, while 3 out of 3, a couple more this year would have you in a completely different conversation. That's what we mean when we say this every week.
Yeah, and then that was from Southern Miss 09 on the message board, right? I wanted to give that guy credit. Yeah, yes. So we're gonna cite him because he's been putting out a lot of good numbers on the Golden Eagle Pride 247 message board. So I'll give him a shout out for putting those numbers together, and I'm sure he won't mind us, using those. And I wanted to make sure we gave him credit for that. Yes, but yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. So, but I guess kind of looking at pitching, I guess the big thing pitching wise was the shakeup in the rotation. I mean, you had Oldham on Friday and then Allen on Saturday, Mazza Sunday. And, Oldham had his, usual pretty good start.
He went seven, so complete game with the run rule, 7 innings, 2 hits, 3 earned, 2 walks. Both of those walks came back to score. So it could have been a dang near complete game shutout, 97 pitches and 1 hit-by-pitch. So 3 freebies and 2 of the 3 for sure came around to score. But that's what we've come to expect from Billy. And he threw great Friday.
Yeah, really preserving that bullpen for the last 2 days. And I guess we'll kind of see how that shakes out going forward. I mean, I think you got to keep him on or in that Friday role for now. Although, or I guess we can get into Mazza before we get into Allen. But, Mazza comes in on Tuesday, and that was kind of the big surprise, pitching against Nichols. And just everybody's wondering, all right, well, is he going to become the closer now? Because, there's some people, including me, I think he's kind of more of an after reliever, but he certainly has the ability to start. He's shown that, in the non-conference part of the schedule, and then this last Sunday. He looked good on the Tuesday game, and then came back through 6 scoreless before running into some trouble in that top of the 7th against ULM with a couple walk, or a walk and a hit by pitch. And it seemed like, I don't know if he ran out of gas or what, but I think he's definitely earned another start. It seems like he's kind of getting back on the right track. Really had everything going up until that 7th inning. And then I guess we'll kind of see what they do with that Saturday or number 3 spot. I mean, I don't think it was Allen's best outing. Went 3 innings. Gave up 3 runs, all earned, 6 hits. Walked 1, struck out 2. And then, he had Armistead come in and pitch really well, I thought. So it'll be interesting to see how they continue or how this, rotation continues to shake out. I mean, do you move Mazza to Saturday? Do you move Armistead back to Sunday? And just kind of, I guess, how that plays out heading into the 2 most crucial weekends of the year.
Yeah, and you and I talked about it on Saturday, and not you, Fitz. Me and Patrick. Fitz avoided me all weekend. I'm just kidding. But at some point, that Saturday role is going to move up to Friday when you have conference tournament, or when you have the week before conference tournament week, where you're going to Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, and then that turns into a Thursday game in game 2 of the conference tournament. So that's something to note going forward. If we wanted to move Nico up, then he'd have to go 6 days rest, unless you want to bump him back to 5 days rest in one of those, which would kind of be a lot. But yeah, I think that third slot on the weekend is going to – I don't know that anything's going to click. And Oz kind of alluded to that today on Eagle Hour, saying that he's seen Colby look great out of the pen, as we all have this year. He's seen him look great starting in inter-squad scrimmages, and just nothing's kind of stuck so far. But the piggyback of 7 innings and 3 runs between him and Armistead, I think you'd take on that third game of the weekend, or that third rotation spot, whenever that falls on the weekend. Just about any time. And Josh Hawk looked good as well, too. He might be my candidate for late bloomer of the year.
Okay, so moving on to Tulane. They are 22-18, 7-8 in the AEC, 110 RPI, 115 Massey. And yeah, I mean, I guess we don't have a ton on them just because we've already played them. But they did win 2 out of 3 this most recent weekend at FAU. But yeah, Brady Marget, 937 OPS, 6 home runs. T.O. Banks is a guy, 10 home runs, has big power. Big swing and miss, but big power. He has 10 home runs, but 46 strikeouts, 849 OPS on the year. So, I mean, yeah, again, I don't have a ton on Tulane just because, again, we've already played them. And then, you know, all the midweeks at this point, it's kind of, you're kind of at the point of the season with the midweeks where it's like, you know, if you're playing like an MLB The Show, you just want to sim through these games in franchise mode or whatever it's called. Just get to the big league weekends. But yeah, do you have any thoughts? Oh, and I guess Jimmy Middleton starting. So that is something I know. That's his first start of the year, second of his career. Last year he started at Alabama. So hopefully that'll get him going a little bit because he did look good against Nichols, not as well against ULM. But yeah, any thoughts on the Greenies this weekend? Or this week.
Go ahead, Fitz.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting to the point to where, you know, you can't really afford to lose some of these lower RPI games. I say lower RPI, I mean, you know, upper 100s or whatever, or lower 100s, whatever it is. Just gotta take care of business.
Yeah, the stats look pretty similar between us and Tulane, other than the fact that they leave the yard a little more than we do. Very similar RPI to a UNO or a Texas State or a Nichols. Similar teams, not necessarily Texas State, but a bunch of teams we play midweeks against. And if you look at our schedule, our last three midweeks have contained a very complete baseball game, a horrendously blown lead at Southeastern, and a comeback victory against Nichols. And that's just a perfect microcosm of our season. We can beat anyone, we can lose to anyone, we can blow a lead to anyone, we can come back to anyone. And it's just a matter of staying focused and not giving it bats away and focusing all 27 outs to play good baseball that I hope we can do against Tulane tomorrow and against the other three we have in the state of Louisiana this week.
Yeah, so moving into this weekend, ULL, obviously that is the big, I mean, you're really looking at these next 2 weekends as the being again, kind of just talking about, like, you know, MLB The Show and, you know, simming the games that you actually want to play and, you know, just kind of bypassing some of the games you don't want to play. I mean, these next 2 weekends are the games you don't want to sim in franchise. Or these next 2 weekends, the games you don't want to sim in franchise mode. But, yeah, ULL, 31-11, 15-3 in the league. They lead the league by 4 games. They just lost 2 out of 3 at Coastal. 43 RPI, losing 2 out of 3 at home against Rice, hurting them. 41 in Massey. I think they're 21 or 22 in the Diamond Sports rating, which is something new from D1 that I was looking at earlier. But yeah, I mean, offensively, or I guess we'll start with the pitching because I think they're more intriguing on the mound. So the rotation they're going to roll out there, or that they rolled out there this last weekend, and I would expect them to keep it going this weekend. Chase Morgan on Friday, who's a freshman left-hander from around Houston. Andrew Herman, who's the JUCO lefty, who's going to start on Saturday for him. And then Sunday, Carson Fluno, veteran right-hander. He's a fourth or fifth-year guy. And he'll be on Sunday. But I guess just kind of looking at the numbers, Chase Morgan, 270 ERA, 0.90 whip, 13 walks, 43 strikeouts. Yeah, so Chase Morgan, 486. OPS or a hitter's hit 486 OPS against him. That is tops in the Sun Belt. So, yeah, I mean, again, a guy that he's been really impressive as a freshman. He's not giving up a home run. That's a big part of that, why that opposing OPS is so low. Didn't give up a lot of extra base hits or any home runs. Yeah, he's a pitchability lefty, 89-92, can touch 93. He's going to throw a plus changeup, according to D1's fall report. And then you look at Herman, 277 ERA, 119 whip, 19 walks, 49 strikeouts, 88-92 with a fastball, going to throw a curveball and a change. And then on Sunday, Carson Fluno, who USM saw last year, and really dominated on that Friday night game. That was the game that honored Barry. And then pitched okay against USM, the Sun Belt Championship. Then he went 4 innings, gave up maybe 2 runs. But he has a 291 ERA this year, 0.09 whip. So all three of their rotation under a 3 ERA and under a 120 whip. And Flynn, again, he's a pitchability righty. He's going to be, you know, low 90s, going to throw a slider, you know, improved changeup. But I think the X factor for them on the mound this weekend is going to be their closer, LP Langenvin. He is a JUCO transfer from Quebec, and he has been honestly pitching like one of the better relievers in college baseball. So he has a 2.53 ERA, a 0.98 WHIP. But if you look at just his relief outings, which I did because he had three starts and they were just okay, he has like below a 1.20 ERA and like a 0.67 or 0.68 WHIP. But I mean, you look at his numbers overall. 21 walks, 74 strikeouts, 42 innings. So that's 15 and a half K over nine. And then if you look at the synergy statistics, I'll throw this in there while I'm waiting. 30 innings as a reliever, 30 and a third, 30 and two thirds, struck out 60 in those 30 and a third or 30 and two thirds innings. So he's as a reliever. Almost struck out double the amount of batters as innings. So, yeah, that's almost an 18K over nine rate as a reliever. Okay, here we go. So
he also has nine more innings in their Sunday starters by having six less starts. So he's not just a one inning and done guy.
Right. So, yeah, so the synergy stats has him on fastballs. 47% of fastballs, I guess, that are whipped on. I think he got 14 swing and misses on fastballs against Coastal. And he's struck out like 42 or 43% of all batters he's faced. The only guys that are ahead of him in that statistic are Hagen Smith, Chase Burns, and Trey Yesevich. Those are all going to be very, very high draft picks. And I guess I should tell this, Hagen Smith at Arkansas, Chase Burns at Wake Forest, and Trey Yesevich at ECU. So he leads the country in fastball whiff rate, among the national leaders in K over nine, and strikeout rate in terms of batters faced. And again, like Brent said earlier, he's the guy that they can extend. He threw five innings against Coastal, retired all 15 batters he faced, struck out 10 of the 15 batters that he did face. So, I mean, again, this is a guy that has been a dominant reliever for him. And, again, he's going to work 92 to 95 and apparently has a ton of movement on the fastball. So it's really hard to square up. I think his zone contact rate on fastballs is also the lowest in the country. So when fastballs are when he throws fastballs in the zone, they're only made contact on about like 40% or 60% of the time, which again for fastballs in the zone is a really low number. So really tough to make contact on his fastballs. David Christie is another guy that throw out there. 2.65 ERA, 34 innings, 15 walks, 31 Ks, 1.14 WHIP. Matthew Holzhammer, another guy. He's I think in the top of slider whiff rate. 2.95 ERA, 1.31 WHIP. On 21 innings. And then I guess one more guy I'll mention, Jack Martinez, who was started as the Friday guy. He's a D3 transfer from Trinity College, 4.24 ERA, 34 innings pitch, 1.35 WHIP. But yeah, as a team, 3.69 ERA, 1.28 WHIP. But I guess what's y'all's thoughts on their pitchers based on, you know, that information?
Yeah, I knew that the offense had started slow compared to what I guess we'd come to expect from UL teams, but they come on, but I had no idea their pitching was stellar as it was until digging into them. Opponents only hit 214 against them, and they hit below 220 against all three weekend starters, below 200 against the two weekend starters and Langevin that you just mentioned. Those are as good of numbers as we've seen this year, and the fact that two of them are of the left-handed flavor are not great either for us, so we're going to have to not take any at-bats off and be sure to convert when runners are on and get a lead early because they've got Langevin in their back pocket. They can extend. And anybody that retires 15 straight at Coastal's ballpark, that's pretty much the equivalent of Georgia State that weekend. That's pretty impressive and not something you see every day.
Yeah, I mean, I know I say this every single week, but this is going to be a huge test for us. And is as much as I hate to say it, and I hope the players don't listen to the podcast, but this is going to define our outlook for the season, the entire season this weekend. So, you know, you got to hope that the bats stay hot, like we saw at some points this week or this past week. If not, we could be in for a world of hurt.
Yeah. And then just, I guess, going through their offense real quick, and you guys can comment on this if you want. Hitting 867 OPS as a team, 296 average, 51 home runs. Haven't stolen quite as many bases as they usually do, only 49, which is kind of low for them. But looking at the three guys that, you know, kind of make them go, Trey LaFleur, Connor Higgs, and really Cal DeBarge. He's the most talented player on this team. But I guess we'll start off with DeBarge. Plays shortstop for him, has 13 home runs, 1089 OPS. He's a guy probably going to go on day one of the draft. He's someone that I was looking at the synergy statistics. He's top 10 or 15 among shortstops in defensive runs saved or defensive war, whatever number they use. So he can really hit, but he's also a good defender. I mean, again, he's one of the better shortstops in the country. Connor Higgs plays outfield for him, 14 OPS. Nine home runs. There's some swing and miss there. He struck out 44 times, so he'll be among the Sun Belt leaders in strikeouts. But again, there's some big pop there. And then Trey LaFleur, a guy who's an older player, transferred in from Ole Miss several years ago, and he's really finally put it together this year. Has seven home runs, 1147 OPS. So yeah, I mean, those are kind of the three guys that make them go offensively. And again, you know, pretty comparable numbers. USM offensively a little better in terms of OPS, but. Again, you look at DeBarge, Higgs, and LaFleur as their kind of three studs there in the lineup. So, I guess, what kind of takes do y'all have on that that ULL lineup?
Yeah, you said it about DeBarge. He's got a chance to be the first name call from the Sun Belt in the draft. Or is he this year? Is he in school another year? I remember being
no. He's a junior.
Okay, thank goodness. Hope he goes really high and leaves then. But yeah, a little bit better offensive numbers, but I think that. You kind of summarize it. They've got a little more star power, I'd say, than we do. And I hope that our depth, not that they're not deep, they're hitting 300 as a team. You're doing something right. Or 296, rounding up there as a numbers guy. But, yeah, they're going to – they're not just a one-trick pony with three starters with 1,000 OPS, and we have zero of those. So you got to come ready to play on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I hope this weekend is a time where our entire staff, pitching wise, you know, comes together and puts together a complete weekend, which we have not seen in a while. Because, like I mentioned earlier, this is do or die this weekend, and if we don't have a good showing, then I hate to say it, but the rest doesn't matter nearly as much as it does right now.
Yeah, so I guess just wrapping up, two pitchability lefties, which you've seen, those give USM trouble for, you know, many years. And actually, their pitching coach is Gunnar Ligier, who is, when he played at ULL, was very much a pitchability lefty. And he was kind of one of the three or four guys that really held that 2017 team, I would say the best lineup that's ever come through USM. Was one of three or four pitchers that really held them down. And it's kind of, you know, their pitching staff is sort of kind of reflecting him in a way, just – with those first two guys being, pitchability lefty is in the rotation. So that is a concern. And then, obviously Langenvin, X Factor, again, a guy that can extend. He's been utterly dominant as a closer. So, I mean, there's a possibility you could see him twice if needed. And it'll be very interesting to see, the lineup fares against him. Again, a guy that's been, you know, pretty much unhittable here since he's converted. Exclusively as a closer. He's going to throw that mostly just because he has a lot of movement. It's 92, 95. Also going to throw a slider as well. But again, yeah, you know, retiring 15, all 15 guys you face at Coastal with 10 of those being strikeouts, there's not a whole lot of arms in the country that can do that. So that'll be, you know, certainly one of the better, I mean, probably the best relief arm you've seen this year in all honesty. But any closing thoughts on that? Or are we ready to move on to the Sun Belt stuff?
I'm good.
I don't know that we've looked worse at matching up on paper-wise so far this year, but it's the funny thing about Southern Miss is that sometimes we do the unexpected and perform well in these moments. So I hope we've got one of those rabbits in the hat types this weekend. Unfortunately, Danny Lynch isn't playing in this series.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, definitely series of the year. These next 2 weekends, again, you know, these are the series you don't sim on MLB The Show. I've said that now 3 times, but yeah, going to pretty much swing the season in these next 2 weekends. But real quick on Sunbelt, South Al took 2 out of 3 from Texas State. App, they won, or they went 2-0-1 at Arkansas State. Had a tie there on Sunday because of travel. We talked about ULL and Coastal. Coastal won that 2 out of 3 in Conway. ODU swept Martin. Well, is that a sweep? Let's see. 2 out of 3. ODU won 2 out of 3 at Marshall. JMU swept Georgia Southern, and JMU is now, I guess, yeah, I mean, I would say JMU is probably in as of now. I mean, they're 10-8 in the league. Top 25 RPI, the league record, was the one thing that was kind of keeping them out of the postseason conversation. But now I think that top 25 RPI, they have a real shot to get in. They still play Arkansas State and Marshall at home, so that's going to help their league record. So they need to probably get to 18-12 to kind of be a serious at-large contender, but in a decent spot now. And then Troy took 2 out of 3 against Georgia State. And then real quick, at the end of this weekend, Troy at Coastal, App at Georgia State, ULM at Old Dominion, Marshall at Georgia Southern, Texas State at Arkansas State, and JMU at South Al. So I guess any thoughts on Sunbelt the last week and then heading into this week?
I didn't realize Troy and Coastal were playing each other this weekend. That means the top 4 teams are all playing some sort of each other this week. Only the Sunbelt, right? Goodness, yeah. There's no off weeks in this league, and there's on weeks, and we've certainly got 2 of these next 2 weeks. That's for sure. Depending on your range of outcomes from this series, could make you 1 game out of first place or the 9 seed. That's how much we're beating each other up right now. It's a fun league to be in, but it's not fun when you're not winning.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a good reason to keep an eye on that Troy and Coastal series.
I guess you're pulling for 2 out of 3 one way there. Or do you want Coastal to sweep before they come to the feet? You probably want Coastal.
I think you'd take Coastal 2 out of 3 I guess you'd take Troy 2 out of 3 because you already have the tiebreaker against Troy. And you feel like Coastal has a pretty – after they come to Hattiesburg, it's a pretty soft schedule for them the last 2 weekends. I think they play Marshall and somebody else that isn't very good. I think exactly Georgia State, so I shouldn't say that because Georgia State beat us up. But I would take a Coastal 2 out of 3, just because you already. Or sorry, Troy 2 out of 3, just because you already have the tiebreaker. Yeah. By the way, they played Georgia the last 2 weekends. Georgia State and at Marshall. Crazy midweek series for Coastal. They're going to Creighton for 2 games.
Wow.
They're playing at Creighton on Tuesday and Wednesday. So they have a home series against Lafayette this last week, and then they're flying to Omaha Tuesday and Wednesday to play Creighton. And they're coming back to play Troy at home. So it's just completely random. It's not even like they're playing at Texas State, which is, I guess, in the same time zone. I don't know, maybe it's their spring break or something, and they want to go ahead and get a look at TD or Charles Schwab Field.
And it's not like their arms are fresh from last weekend against UL either. There were a lot of dongs hit in that wiffle ball park last weekend too. That was a heck of a baseball series.
They're going from the most hitter friendly park to the most pitcher friendly park. Playing at Omaha.
Yeah, good point.
Golly, that is weird. But yeah, I guess we're ready for questions.
All righty, we are definitely not short of questions this week. Appreciate all of your feedback and questions. First, we'll start with Kyle from Midtown. He says, got 2 for us. He says, what's the bubble picture look like for the rest of the season?
Firmly on the bubble now. I mean, just outside the top 50 of RPI. I mean, I think right now, once you factor in that there's going to be bid stealers, I think, probably out as of right now. But again, these next 2 weekends allow you to play your way in. If you can go 4-2, I think you're backing in. I think 3-3 is still trending bubble-ish. 2-4, I think you'd probably have to win it all on Montgomery. But I'm still looking at 20 wins as the magic number to feel pretty decently about at-large heading into Montgomery. I think 21, I think, would be a lock. I think 19 and under is bubble or worse. So, again, the most probable way would be winning these next 2 weekends, and then, going 5-1 the rest of the – or 5-1 against Arkansas State and Texas State, or going 3-3 these next 2 weekends, sweeping Texas State, Arkansas State, and then going 2-1 in your midweek. We kind of forget about those midweeks. You definitely don't want to lose to UNO at home next week. That would be a really tough RPI loss. But, again, right now very bubbly. But, next 2 weekends allow you to play your way off the bubble.
Fitz?
Don't like to think about it.
I'd say as viewer's guide for the rest of the year, you want everybody on our schedule to win every game they're playing. And then you want, out of the power conference teams, you want the guys at the top to win every game. And you want the people middle, average, or bottom third of every conference to lose every game to make that picture paint a little clearer. And then once conference tournament week comes in, you want the chalkiest week ever. Every one seed you want to win. But we're quite a few ways to go before that week. All right, Kyle's second question is, what is your favorite USM jerseys of all time in any sport? My favorites are the Russell throwbacks, the original cream cursive Southern across the chest with the black and gold piping. I don't think there's anything better.
I'm just going to go Pins, I guess.
Our Pins are nice.
I guess we'll stick with baseball. I was thinking of like basketball or football, but I guess stick with baseball. I like the old gray, just that Southern Miss on them. That we wore in Omaha, the year of Omaha. We don't wear those anymore, but those are good. I also like the black.
I've got one of those.
Okay, yeah, cool. I like them.
All righty. We'll head over to the X. I'm going to filter these through some Lafayette burners. So we appreciate your interest in our content, Lafayette burners. Nice. But those questions will not make it on the pod. First question is, Andy from Tupelo. Andrew from Tupelo is making an appearance after a few week hiatus. It's a funny question too. Thanks, Andy. He says, what would it take to get Jonathan and his girlfriend back for all the remaining games? Seems like she may be the one that's the difference maker. Yes, my girlfriend is 2-0 at Pete Taylor Park. We didn't stay for Sunday, so I will take any sponsorships to get her back for the Coastal weekend and any postseason ball that we might play. So hit my Venmo. I'll give you my agent Fitz's number.
Nice.
Muster Buzzer Bleacher Creature says, does the university have a merchandising problem? I guess this is in reference to the Camp Shelby jerseys, which are awesome, by the way, being able to be purchased that look fairly legitimate. On Fanatics and nothing else we have jersey-wise on there.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is subjective, but I do wish we would offer more. And look, I know there's a lot more that goes into that than somebody just saying, hey, let's do this. But, I wish we did offer some more game-authentic apparel, jersey-wise. And then, it's a very simplified and clean branded items, I guess, is what I prefer. But again, that's all subjective. The people making those kind of decisions may have a completely different opinion than me, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I don't really have anything on merchandising.
Dylan says, what is your regular season record prediction as of now? Currently, we are 25-15, and then he lists out the remaining schedule and says, my pessimism says 30-25. So that would mean 5-10 on the way in.
I'm going to say 35-20, I think. Split the next – or go 3-3 the next six, and then go 2-1 in the midweeks. So that's 5-4. And then I guess I'll project one of the two being a sweep, the last two being a sweep, even though sweeps have been hard to come by, as we talked about. But that would mean 5-1, so then that would be 10-5. 10-5 on the way. So, yeah, 35-20, 19-11 in the league, which would be very bubbly heading in to Montgomery.
I'm going to take what you predicted and subtract two games based off of the inconsistency we've seen and go with just from a current season formula and go 33. And I guess that'd be what, 33-22?
Two. Got 55 games, yep.
Fitz?
Yeah, I'm going to hope for that 35 wins. I feel like it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's doable. Let's do it.
Brick has a lot of question marks in this tweet. I'll just read it all. It seems like a big rant. He says, why are 8 SEC teams in the top 25? Why should I not be upset to see all but the two bottom feeders making it to regionals? at what point will all these bug con expansions, will SEC teams play in the same regionals? You've answered this before in a short tweet, but could you elaborate? I assume that's in reference to Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just kind of, I guess, a resource thing. You know, I guess it's just the trend of college baseball over the last 10 to 15, 20 years where, I mean, the schools that support baseball the most are, I mean, you look at the top 10 of attendance, it's basically 9 SEC schools, counting Texas and USM being the one non-SEC school in the top 10 of attendance. You look at finances, they're all pretty much SEC schools at the top that spend the most on baseball. And yeah, I mean, it is becoming a deal where, you know, you kind of used to be, you know, more regional, and or I guess, you know, the West Coast schools and, you know, schools like Miami, you know, were in Arizona State, and I guess it said West, so Arizona State would fall into that. But, you know, they used to do really well just kind of based off geography, and there were always, you know, a ton of players in California that they could get. Well, now recruiting's more national. And, you know, you're starting to see the SEC kind of is able to kind of recruit a lot of those from places they haven't been able to recruit in the past. And that's making their rosters better and weakening a lot of these other schools in the Pac-12. I mean, you're seeing the Pac-12 have its worst year ever this year. And I think it's been, you know, this has been sped up with the portal now. So even the guys that the SEC misses on, they can come back in 1 or 2 years and get them. You also have a lot of the best coaches that are now wanting to coach in the SEC. I mean, you look like Jim Schlossnagel, who was at TCU for a very long time in the Big 12, and in the Mountain West as well when he first got there. In fact, when he first got there, they were in CUSA, but the Big 12 for the bulk of his tenure. So you're seeing and then, you know, guys like, you know, Wes Johnson coming in to Georgia and reinvigorating them. He came from the major leagues and then went to LSU as a pitching coach and now with Georgia as his head coach. So you're seeing, I guess, sort of a brain drain. That's probably not the best way to describe it as, but just a talent drain in the sport where all the coaches and best players and coaches are going to the SEC because that's where the most support is, the most finances are. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's reflected that in the computer ratings. I mean, it's not just D1. If you look at, you know, the Massey ratings, I think eight teams from the SEC in the top 25. As well. So that's reflected in, you know, objective metrics as well. Now, is there good baseball played outside the SEC? Of course. But just the way it is right now and, you know, the way it's certainly continuing to trend is that the SEC is going to be dominating college baseball just because they put the most money in it and the people in the SEC are, you know, the most passionate for the most part for college baseball.
Yeah, I think the biggest shift if I can funnel that down into one sentence, and I guess in the last 5 years, is that I don't think that Georgia, Tennessee, or Kentucky knew they had college baseball or cared about it as much 5 years ago. And look at all three of them, all in the top 25 right now, and can do a lot of damage. And the SEC was always good and had the state Ole Miss, LSU, Arkansas every year, and now you've got this extra tier and all this money, and money's only growing at an exceedingly fast rate. So it's the computers back it up. It is as talented as the projections have it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, and then the big thing is like facilities. I mean, it used to be back in the 2000s, you know, the facilities between like an Ole Miss and a UCLA or a Stanford, they weren't that different. Well, now, you know, UCLA and Stanford basically have the same facilities they did then. And the SEC schools, you know, your Ole Misses, your LSUs, Alabama, I mean, pretty much they've all, Florida State, I mean, they've all upgraded facilities. And the other schools, for the most part, at least like your old Pac-12 powers, which is kind of where the strength of college baseball used to be in the West. And it has definitely shifted to the South. And, you know, and again, that's part of, you know, support, attendance, facilities, all that.
Yeah. Jace has a second one for us. He says, should us as fans expect to be in a super regional every year from now on, especially with our current history the past 2 years, or is that a stretch?
I think a stretch is the understatement of the century. That's look. I don't know if there's anybody that's enjoyed the past two seasons more than me, especially with our postseason success. But I don't know if you can expect any team in college baseball, including, you know, your perennial powerhouses and national championship winners, to consistently make or host a super regional every single season. That's insane. So no offense to Jace and I like the question, but that's an insane stretch to think about. And if those were the expectations, we'd be in some big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, even like Arkansas, who has been the best, I think, pretty fair to say they've been the best regular season college baseball program over the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, they didn't make a super regional last year. They hosted, but they lost in the regional to TCU. So that just kind of shows you how hard it is to make it every year when, you know, someone like Arkansas didn't even make it last year. But, yeah, I mean, look, I said it on this podcast when Ben and I first started doing this, and I said it on Twitter during the Oxford regional in 21. I said, man, I just would be happy if USM can make it just two super regionals in a decade. Well, now we've already been to two, and, you know, now it would be a little bit of a disappointment if we don't win another or don't get to another super regional for those 7 or 8 years. Every year, no. But, I mean, you know, a couple a decade I think is pretty fair. And I think if you get to, you know, two or three super regionals a decade and you're making regionals pretty much every year, I mean, that would still put you within the top 25 of college baseball programs, I'm pretty sure. You know, I've run the numbers on this before with my point values thing. So every year, no. But, I mean, I think, you know, you expect to make regionals pretty much every year and have a roster that having a team or slash a roster that is capable of getting to a super regional. Which, I mean, that's the case for a lot of teams. I mean, with the nature of postseason baseball being a crapshoot, I mean, there's a lot of teams. There's probably like 50 or 60 teams, honestly, with USM being one of those this year, even in a down year, that are capable of making a super regional. Obviously, it doesn't mean they're all going to make it. There's only 16 make it. But, yeah, I guess long answer that didn't really answer it, but that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I guess something else to put in perspective. Like, yes, we've gone 2 for 2 the last 2 years, but we've only made 3 of these in our program's history. And the first one, as special as that year was, it was a fluke. It was the exception, not the rule. And you could switch that one out with the nightmare on 4th Street and say we should have played in 4, or that should have more likely been our 3rd, and not 2009. But to be in a low resource conference and know the fact there's 300 plus D1 baseball teams expecting to be one of the 16 left every year in such a random sport like baseball is a stretch. But I think it can be in your range of outcomes, but not the lower end of the middle end of them. It's been a lot of fun these last 2 years, goes without saying. And I hope we all don't take that for granted. Question from Mason. He says, as fans, if the team makes a regional, does this confirm anything for you about Oz being the guy, as in he'll be the guy to take us back to Omaha and potentially a national title? Ooh. Back-to-back bangers right there.
Yeah, I'm not gonna dip my toe into any of those, you know, crazy, you know, predictions of Omaha national championships and things like that. But I mean, there's a very good reason why he's our head coach, and I don't think he would have been considered had he not been basically hand selected by Scott Barry, who was hand selected by Corky Palmer, who was hand selected by you know, Hill Danson or whatever. And that's the way it is, and you got to trust that decision-making process for what it is. And honestly, the financial situation that we're in as an athletic department, I don't think that there was another logical choice at that point in time. Those things are fluid. Things change. The dynamic changes every day in college athletics, as we see. So, you know, that could be reevaluated in months, days, years, weeks from now, whatever. But that's how I see it.
Yeah, this year to me feels very 2010-ish in terms of you have a new staff or a new head coach, and I guess the only difference was you're coming off Omaha in 09, you're coming off a super regional in 23. But, you know, the 2010 team needed to get in or win the automatic to get in, and, you know, who knows, this team might have to do it too. But I think it's too early. I think he'll need a couple years, or at least, you know, by year two or year three to kind of, you know, have a – and I know he's been part of the roster building process because he's been on staff, but – you know, to have, I guess, a fully stacked deck or whatever they call it, this, you know, really capable of making a run like you've had these last 2 years. So I think, you know, if you make a regional this year, I think that shows at least like he's not, you know, and I always thought Ostrander was the guy, but, you know, if he came in and had like a year where he went 28-20, it was like, oh, well, maybe he's not the guy. But if you make a regional this year, that at least shows a baseline level of competence and coaching or being a head coach in high-level college baseball. And then, I mean, that shows a floor, and then, you know, we'll see what a ceiling is, but I don't think you can kind of determine the ceiling this year. It'll take a couple of years to see what that is. And, I mean, look, it really took Barry until year 7 to really get it going. I mean, people forget that this first, or I guess the first few years made regionals, but the 2010 team needed the automatic to get in, the 2011 team fell apart down the stretch. And then he missed regionals for four straight years. And a lot of people, honestly, including myself, thought, well, is Barry really the guy? And then he strung together, you know, the most successful, I guess it was, take out the COVID year, most successful six-year run in terms of regular season consistency in program history, you know, kind of by far. So, you know, well, you know, hopefully it didn't take by year seven for things to really get going like it did for Barry. But I think Oscar Ander, he'll be fine.
Yeah, a regional stamp this year doesn't quantify him being the guy or not in my mind. He is the guy regardless is what I try. I say that to get to that point. I'm glad you brought up Barry's tenure, Patrick. Yeah, they needed the tournament win in his first year after Omaha to get in, then made a regional, then missed four straight. But granted, they were probably one of the first four teams out in 14 and 15 before they started the region, this regional streak. But no, I think that when you're talking about Austin, you're talking about a guy who could have had any SEC pitching coach job and probably some of the head coaching jobs in the SEC if he really wanted to go out and shop for him, but he didn't. He believed in us in this program, and his track record with developing pitchers that aren't going to be the highest recruiter, the highest NIL bidded is a perfect mold for us. And you look at his tenure here as pitching coach, moving Stanlin from closing to starting in his first year. It's probably the best season on the mound we've ever had from a starter. Similar with Hunter Stanley and Ryan Ock, Waldrop out of the pen, all these other guys, Tanner Hall going from midweek to a two-time All-American. Like, you've seen his development. You've seen the way he can push buttons and get the most out of his guys, how the pins kind of get better as the years go on and their depth. And I he's the guy either way for me.
All right. There was a question.
Did I miss one?
Let me make sure. I thought there was I don't think you did.
I did miss one. Sorry. It says, why are we allergic? This is from Joseph. Sorry, Joseph. I was scrolling too fast earlier. He says, why are we allergic to sweeping series this season?
Wish I knew.
Yeah, I think everybody in that dugout and everybody in that stadium every weekend wishes that's the million-dollar question right there. I think it's a little bit of a whole lot of things, not necessarily a whole lot of one or two things.
Oh, did you get this about the Cloverleaf, the one about the monthly subscription?
I did not. I'll read it and let you answer because I have no idea. Cloverleaf did some digging for us on South Carolina's website. Sorry, that looked like an ad to me. I guess that's why I scrolled past it. but it says he has a screenshot of a South Carolina. It's called the Gamecock Go Pass. And essentially, it's a Go Pass, costs $20 a month, and gives access to all non-conference football games, basketball games, and volleyball games. And he says, should we create something like this to all home sporting events as a way to increase attendance?
Yeah, I think there are some schools that do that. Or like I've seen some schools that do like an Olympic pass or something. I think there's some even, you know, it's not necessarily South Carolina, but like some middle schools doing it. Unfortunately, I can't remember who exactly it is. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, just keep the tickets the way they are now. It seems like people are pretty happy with that, right? Or maybe they're not. If they're not, they haven't told me about it.
Yeah, I think at $20 a month, which is what an SEC school is doing, we probably have to do something comparable or cheaper. And I don't know that there would be a material number of people that to click purchase on those to make it move the needle too much either way. That's my probably pessimistic opinion.
There was a question from Jace. Given how the season has gone thus far, do you think if we complete the potential sweep weekends, we might be in conversation to host, or do the Q3 and Q4 losses still outweigh that? I guess what does he mean? Like if you go back and like take away Marist and ULM and Missouri State, I mean, maybe. I think Jonathan kind of talked about that earlier about how, you know, those bad RPI losses are keeping you out. But, I mean, I think at this point, you know, hosting, even if you win, I mean, the news report does not have USM able to get in the top 16, which is makes it, you know, pretty hard to host, although USM did host just outside of the top 16 in 2022. But you also had the regular season title that year. Regular season title this year, I mean, you're four games back now with 12 to play. I mean, I guess if you do sweep this weekend, you get back one back. But, you know, still, I think the RPI is going to be disqualifying on that.
Yeah, I think you could probably play this exercise for a majority of the top 50 teams in the country. If you take their five worst losses and make them wins, you have a top 16 RPI? Probably so. That's what's frustrating to look back on. That's not necessarily math that I want to do. But we did play a little tougher schedule at this point last year. And those stats earlier, I think it was a top 20 strength of schedule. We're kind of fringe top 60 right now for the year for that comp that Southern Miss 09 gave us. So I guess that is another factor. But, yeah, it's frustrating to think of the cushion we could have laid ourselves these next 2 weekends, but we don't have that luxury right now, and hope that means we play with a little more urgency.
I don't want to host anyways.
Honestly, after 17, I mean, I'll still like hosting, but I do view it differently than I did after the 2017 season.
Yeah, 2017 broke a lot of sports thoughts for me and my brain, too. That would be a fun Mount Rushmore top four wins or losses that shaped your current sports fandom thoughts.
Yeah. Nola no calls up there. But we won't talk about the Saints, Fitz.
Yeah.
There's a day in November for the Atlanta Braves that's up there with me, too, but I won't talk about the Braves either, Fitz. All right, sorry. I guess my filtering of the burners has turned into reading too fast, and I missed those, but I think we circled through all of them.
Yeah, so I guess real quick, golf is at the Sun Belt Tournament at Annandale, men's golf, and they are two shots back of being in top four to get into match play. So, again, yeah, they need to get in top four to get into match play, and then match play, just, you know, semifinals and then your finals, so... they're going to need the automatic bid to get in. Last year, they had a kind of an outside shot of an at-large. They, you know, had gotten into match play, and especially if they had made the finals, I think they would have gotten in. But they're in the 100s of the latest spike mark, I think, is the new. They replaced Golf Stat in terms of basically this, like the RPI of college golf. So they will need the automatic, but they are in position. There's two shots back of match play range with two rounds to go. If they play well these next 2 days, have a shot to get in the match play, and then, you know, who knows what can happen. All starts at zero after that. So I did want to give a shout-out to golf. And then nothing in the portal in basketball and football. Maybe some visits going on, some contact going on, but nothing official on that note. So anything that happens in that over the next week, we'll talk about that heading into next week. But y'all have anything else, or? Ready to wrap up.
Jeez, I'm looking at this golf leaderboard real quick, and it looks like it's just as deep as the baseball league. Every school except one is within six shots of match play. That's like one shot of golfer.
Yeah, I know Georgia Southern's having a down year.
Yeah, I guess they're not used to playing in their home state like all the Georgia schools have benefited from this year in the spring. But it's pretty neat that it's in Annandale. I guess that gives us some home track advantage. But hope we can use that to go top four.
Right. For Eddie Brescher, Hedman's golf coach, he said it's a multi-year contract. I think it might have one more year, maybe two more years on it. But yeah, that is, you know, certainly a not quite a home environment, not like playing at the Hattiesburg Country Club, but a semi-home environment there in Madison. So,
yeah, all five starters within the top 35. So all six scorers, or all five. I think you count your top four, right? So all five guys are playing pretty good golf. So any of the five we can take, hope they can keep that up.
It's a good thing I'm not on the team.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday night, or next Monday night, rather. I'll be getting back from Houston, or Lafayette, and then Houston, then heading back to Hattiesburg. So. But yeah, we'll have that out. We'll be recapping ULL and previewing Coastal. So we thank you guys for listening.